So I'm curious, for someone watching this, like let's say a business leader that watches this and says, well, that's really nice. I'm private sector. I don't know. I want to have my workers back in the office. I moved them all back. What would you suggest to them based on what you guys have learned?
Is it actually the fact that you've noticed measurable reductions in productivity, or is it more because the managers are uncomfortable with a remote work arrangement?
Oh, interesting.
This episode is brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Since 1991, Texas Mutual has been helping employers prevent workplace accidents. To learn more about how Texas Mutual provides a competitively priced source of workers' comp insurance for Texas employers, visit www.texasmutual.com. Welcome to Austin Hires Local, your inside access to the work behind workforce development, powered by Workforce Solutions Capital Area. Join us as we dive deep into conversations with trailblazers across the local, state, and national workforce development ecosystem. From elected officials to industry leaders and educators, we uncover candid insights and innovative solutions shaping our workforce landscape. Get ready to explore the intersection of education, economy, and opportunity. This is Austin Hires Local, where the future of our workforce begins.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Austin Hires Local podcast. My name is Tamara Atkinson, and I have the honor of serving as the CEO of Workforce Solutions Capital Area. And on this podcast, we have on-the-record conversations with local leaders who are shaping the way our community looks and what happens in workforce development in this great county of ours. So today I am joined by a tremendous leader in our community, Commissioner Bridget Shea from Travis County. So excited to have you here today.
I'm delighted to be here.
And today, Commissioner, I am looking forward to talking to you about childcare, why it is so important, and why employers and people, even if they don't have children, should care about childcare. I'd love to talk to you about ways that the county has been a leader in helping reduce greenhouse gases and really lead on remote working. And I'd love to talk to you about ways that the county is leading on affordability when it comes to housing. And so appreciative that you're here today, and I look forward to jumping into these topics with you.
Same here. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Okay, so since this is the Austin Hires Local podcast and Workforce Solutions is all about work, I'm going to ask you a question you didn't know was coming. And that question is, tell me about your first job and what did you learn from your first job?
My first job was working at a King's Food Host in Minot, North Dakota, and I learned I was a terrible waitress.
What made you a terrible waitress?
In one particularly spectacular fail, I did not pay attention to the laws of gravity, and I placed a tray that had three burger trays, plates, and three large chocolate shakes. The shakes were on the outside. I didn't have the tray all the way on the table. And when I took the plates off, the whole tray flipped and dumped three large chocolate milkshakes down the front of me.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty
miserable.
That was
one of my many fails at being a waitress.
So did that convince you you didn't want to work in restaurants?
Yeah,
and hospitality?
I didn't think that was my calling. Maybe hospitality, but not waitressing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your role as a commissioner, county commissioner. There's been a lot of talk in our community recently about childcare. I think during COVID, many of us recognized how important childcare or the lack thereof is to people being able to work. But I'm going to ask you some questions that may seem obvious to you and me, but for people watching this may not be obvious. Yeah. Talk to me about the relationship as you see it from the county perspective between affordable childcare and being able to have a ready workforce here in Travis County.
Well, it's pretty simple. If people can't find childcare, which is a really big problem, or can't afford it, then they can't go to work. We've seen that in so many situations. I experienced it when my own children were really young. My husband had to take a part-time job so that he could help take care of the kids for part of the day because we couldn't find full-time childcare. And, you know, we had to figure out some other way to make do. And I hear all kinds of stories from people who look at the cost of childcare if they can even get it and realize this is either costs more than what I would make in my job or just about as much as I would make, and it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So it's just a huge problem and almost a direct correlation with people's ability to work in jobs that we need to fill.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I'm really glad that you and your fellow commissioners and the judge really see that. You know, here at Workforce Solutions, we do provide support for childcare. We have over 5,100 families on the wait list, and Commissioner, 40% of those on the wait list are infant or children age 0 to 3. So they're the young ones. So all right. So it sounds like you've identified an issue. You know it's an issue. You know it's impacting the workforce. What does the county want to do about it?
Well, I have to really give a shout out to some friends and colleagues who did an enormous amount of research and work and collaboration and consensus building. And that's Councilmember Allison Alter, Libby Doggett, and Kathy McHorse. They just did an enormous amount of work on this issue for several years and then brought it to the county as an item that we would put on the November ballot to have the voters decide if they want to vote to increase their property taxes in order to provide large-scale, widespread, affordable child care. It's Proposition A on the Travis County ballot. It'll be on the November ballot this year. And it will make about $75 million a year available for between 8 and 10,000 children for childcare that will be heavily subsidized in many cases or outright paid for by this tax increase. So it makes the childcare available. It will also help to improve the training and the certification qualification of the childcare providers and their staff, and enable people to go to work and know that their children will be well taken care of and that they can actually afford it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it'd be a big help for a lot of these families like Workforce Solutions that are on the wait list. But let's talk about people that might look at that and think, well, I don't have young children anymore. Like, it's not going to help me. What would you say to someone in our community that might have that kind of response?
Well, there's an old bumper sticker. I'm showing my age, I'm sure, that says, if you think education is expensive, think about prison. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't properly educate the next generations, future generations, we doom them to a very poor quality of life. Mm-hmm. And I just would say to people, you know, think about what you would want for your own children, for your grandchildren, for your nieces, for your nephews. Because I think if this passes, and I believe it will, I think historians will look back at this point in time and be able to mark a real transformation in the quality of life, in reduced rates of crime, in all kinds of measures of social quality of life. I think this will be an incredibly profound and powerful investment in future generations getting a better start in life.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what the voters choose to do in November. And you're right, we're at a fork in the road. I have been asked by employers and business people about childcare and why does Workforce Solutions put 68% of our budget into childcare? And I'll often—
Is it really that high?
It's that high. 68% of our budget is for childcare, not only to support the families, but also the providers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll ask those employers, are you looking for workers? And when you look for workers, do workers ever decline your offer of employment because of childcare? Or are you employing people at non-traditional hours? And what kind of workers have you found can take those jobs versus not? So I think it will be really interesting in our community as we look at, if this passes, what opportunities open up for more families and hopefully for employers to benefit from workers having access to support.
Absolutely. Do the employers answer, well, yes, we have had trouble filling positions.
Many of them do, especially in the hospitality, entertainment, healthcare. Yep. Industries, but also let's not forget, we are more and more an advanced manufacturing city. where those operations are 24/7.
Right.
And so...
And not everybody has grandparents that can take care of their children.
Well, I think that's exactly right. There's... Yeah. I think it's well established. There's not, we're not necessarily living in with three generations anymore. So when I hear about the scale and scope of what this ballot referendum could bring, I'm a little bit overwhelmed, even as someone that works in the system. How are you at the county thinking about who's going to be necessary? What kind of partners are you going to need, or what kind of operators? Like, how are you starting to think about, if this passes, when this passes, how you're going to roll it out? What should people expect in terms of what it's going to take and when they might see access to some of these services? Yeah.
Well, it will take a little while to actually develop the implementation of it. Mm-hmm. And so I would say to people, don't expect that it's going to be up and running right after the November election if it passes. It's going to take a little while because we'll have to develop the actual design of the services. We don't have all those staff in-house at Travis County now that would be necessary to help implement the program. So we'll have to hire entities to help provide these services and track how the money is spent and who's eligible and who qualifies, all that kind of thing. And it'll take a little while to pull all that together and roll it out.
Do you have enough specificity yet? And maybe this is under development, Commissioner, but do you know, is this going to be for working families? Is it families looking for work? Are there income requirements? Do you have any information like that?
We've actually pegged it to the income requirements that you use at Workforce Solutions.
Okay,
so it'll
good.
Be, what is it, 275% of area median income or the federal? I know there's
so consistent
different.
With the...
Consistent with your income requirements.
Yes.
So that people who are well-to-do and don't need any assistance would not qualify for this. This is really for people who are struggling to make ends meet
and who
need assistance.
Got it. Good. Well, thank you. I know that a lot of people will be watching what happens. Hopefully they'll vote, get out and vote, and then we'll be able to see. And it'll be a really interesting journey.
Yeah. And for just for a context for people, based on the average value home, the child care, they call it a TRE tax rate election, would cost about $10 a month.
Okay. About $10 a month.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about another passion of yours. So child care is a passion of yours, but I've also heard you be a passionate advocate for environmental concerns here in Travis County. But since we're the Workforce Board, I'd love to talk about the nexus between being green or sustainable and workforce. So first of all, just tell me, when you think about being kind to the environment and the workforce, like where do you see opportunities there for Austin residents, for Travis County residents?
Well, interestingly enough, a big opportunity fell in our lap at the start of the pandemic. I think we tend to forget how profound and shocking and abrupt that change was. But in, I think it was about March 6th or so, it became clear this was a very serious illness, a virus. We didn't even know what it was. It was very contagious, and people were dying from it, and it wasn't clear how it was spread. So across the world, people were sent home, and that happened in Travis County. Everyone who could leave, who didn't have to physically be at work to do their job, was told, take your laptop and your documents and work from home. And so it was this massive experiment. And one of the things that we saw immediately was that it solved our traffic congestion problem overnight.
That was kind of amazing.
It was. And that's a huge problem for the community, and one that costs literally billions of dollars and takes decades to solve. I mean, expanding I-35 is going to be the biggest nightmare, you know, for anybody that has to commute on there. And that's just one example of how difficult and how long and how expensive it is to address congestion via road expansion. And there are other options, one of which is having people work remotely. And so here we saw this fabulous grand experiment on a large scale. And at the time, Gerald Doherty was serving on the commissioner's court with me, and he's had a real bee in his bonnet about transit and et cetera. So we worked together to adopt a policy, which we've now won a national award for.
Oh, wow.
And from all the research that we've done, we think it's the most ambitious remote work policy for any local government in the country. And it was Gerald who suggested the numeric goal. I was willing to go a little lower, but once he said it, I was like, sold, I'll take that. But the goal is to have 75% of our eligible employees, meaning people who don't have to physically be at work to do their job. So that's how we roughly defined eligible. So to have 75% of them working remotely on a permanent basis.
Even post-COVID.
Oh, yeah. We've kept it in place and continuing to, you know, massage it and improve it. And we said to the managers, we're not going to tell you who those employees are who are eligible. And we're also not going to dictate, you know, if they can only work remote or if you need them to come in maybe once or twice a week, once or twice a month, whatever you need, you choose, and you're the ones making those decisions. The commissioners aren't going to tell you how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we gave a lot of agency to the managers and the supervisors and also to the employees. And I think that's part of why it's been so successful. And there have been some hiccups. But in general, we have documented, I think, some very obvious, very high employee satisfaction.
Oh, really? I was going to ask you, how's it going? Yeah.
Very, very high worker satisfaction. And some documented increase in productivity. And not in every department have we been able to do this sort of measurement, but the auditor's office in particular has literally documented an increase in productivity. And those are the two things that large employers, they're the holy grail. How do you improve employee satisfaction and how do you improve productivity? And so there were other enormous benefits for both the county and for the community. I'm always looking for ways that local government can reverse climate change and have an impact on reducing our own generated greenhouse gas emissions. And employee commute was the second highest source of our greenhouse gas emissions after the energy that we use in our buildings. So we were able to document about a 25 to 30% reduction in emissions from our employee commute. We reduced emissions for the energy use in our buildings, and we dramatically reduced our contribution to congestion, and we improved people's ability to get to work on time. They, you know, went from their bedroom to their kitchen or wherever they have their office set up. So, and the other thing that we found is that we have had a pretty dramatic increase in the numbers of highly qualified people who apply for jobs at the county.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And do you have any reason to believe it's because of the remote work?
We believe it's directly related.
Wow.
People frequently mention that is a major reason why they are interested, why they've applied, why they would want to come to work for Travis County.
Do you require that they live in Travis County even if they don't? Can they live anywhere?
Well, they can't live out of state.
So they have to be in state.
And they have to be in state. And I think they have to be able to get to work. I don't know that exact parameter.
Okay.
But they can't live out of state. And I think there's sort of a travel time to work. But it's not a hard and fast rule. I know a lot of people live in neighboring counties.
Mm.
You know, that's been a growing phenomenon here because it's expensive to live in Austin or in Travis County. And so a lot of people live in Hays County, Blanco, Williamson, Bastrop, and that works fine. They've mm-hmm. been living in those surrounding counties for a long time.
Sure.
But they're saving money on their commute. They're certainly saving time on their commute. They're not clogging up the roadways in front of everybody else who's
yes.
commuting to work.
Sure,
we're reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. We're reducing our utility bills because we're using less energy at the county. So there's sort of a win-win-win across
the board. I'm not hearing
any
downside here. So because you said the auditor has documented increased productivity. So I'm curious, for someone watching this, like let's say a business leader that watches this and says, well, that's really nice for the public sector. I get that. That's good. I'm private sector. I don't know. I want to have my workers back in the office. I moved them all back. What would you say to a business leader, private sector? What would you suggest to them based on what you guys have learned?
Well, I would ask them, have they lost good employees?
Mm.
Because people have looked for work that gave them more flexibility with remote work elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I would ask, are their employees happier?
Mm.
Because I've heard a lot of grumbling, and there are regular stories in the news about, you know, employers struggling with their employees over this issue. So I think that's those are important conversations to have. And then the other question that comes up frequently is it actually the fact that you've noticed measurable reductions in productivity, or is it more because the managers are uncomfortable with a remote work arrangement?
Oh, interesting.
And that's the thing I hear more often than not, that managers are uncomfortable. And we actually, we brought in Deloitte.
I was going to ask, did you bring any support to your managers on this?
We brought in Deloitte to work with us on, you know, sort of building the exoskeleton really around this to provide support for managers, support for employees, help us with the policy side of it. They're also going to be looking at what opportunities we have for repurposing some of our real estate because we're not using our buildings as extensively. But I think that, you know, this is a work in progress, but I would ask a few more questions of the private sector employers and see, are there employees happy? Are they staying?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Thank you.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Since 1991, Texas Mutual has been helping employers prevent workplace accidents. To learn more about how Texas Mutual provides a competitively priced source of workers' comp insurance for Texas employers, visit www.texasmutual.com.
Commissioner, I appreciate you were talking about affordability and you were talking about the reality that county employees who can work remotely are working sometimes outside of Travis County. Now, selfishly, I like people that can live in Travis County, thrive in Travis County, because at Workforce Solutions, we support and connect local people to local jobs. But we also know, and you expressed it so well, like the reality is some people are feeling like they have to move out. So I'm curious, as you think about priorities for the county in the future, are you concerned about affordability? And if so, what are some ways that you are leading and the county is leading and trying to help people who want to live here stay in this great, great county?
Affordability is just a huge issue. The cost of living, the value of real estate, of people's homes has skyrocketed in recent years. And it's cooling a little bit, but not enough to make a dramatic difference. So we've made a very significant commitment to increase the numbers of affordable multifamily units.
Okay.
We're doing some single home development, but so much of that is market driven as the interest rates have gotten so high, people have pulled back on some of that. But the multifamily development has been very, I would say, very active in recent years, so much so that there's something like 50,000 units coming online.
Oh, wow.
I heard this and saw the data on it about not quite a year ago, and the projection was 50,000 units coming online in the next 2 years. So we're sort of halfway into that. And the other thing I've heard is the market for multifamily development has stopped because the market and the people who are investing in it have said, we're not going to keep building more units when there's 50,000 units coming online. So when people say, you know, supply and demand, the solution to affordable housing is just more demand. You know, more supply, build as much of it as you can. And what they don't recognize is that in the marketplace, investors are saying, no, we're going to stop building more units because the price is going down when there's so much competition. And we're going to start to see this more signs that say first month free.
We're starting to see them already. Okay.
We're starting to see it already.
That's very hopeful.
And I hear this from investors who've said, Austin's overbuilt. We're not going to be building more apartment units. But for our work at the county level, what we've been doing is really focusing on encouraging developers by partnering with them to build deeply affordable units. And because the county doesn't have the money to put into it, the way the units become deeply affordable is we buy down the rent essentially through a tax credit or a tax exemption. By partnering with the county, the property becomes tax exempt.
Oh.
And we require, as that partnership, that they build deeply affordable units. So we have...
What does deeply mean?
Yeah, deeply means at 60% of the area median income. So people whose salary is 60% of the area average.
And they have to prove that?
They have to prove it.
So someone can't just say that.
No, they have to provide all kinds of documentation at 60% and below. So we have units that are 50% of area median income, 30% of area median income. And of that 13,500, two-thirds of them are at that 60% and below.
Mm.
And so we've really pushed the developers because they all want the tax exemption. And we've said, great, we want deeply affordable units in exchange for this because this is a thing of great value for
you. Sure,
So we've been very aggressive. I think we have one of the best portfolios in the state with regard to deeply affordable units. And about half of those are online now. Another half are going to be completed in the next year or so. So that's part of the county's contribution to it. And we've been very committed to that. But one of the other things that we've done, when the Biden administration made enormous amounts of pandemic relief available directly to cities and counties, we turned around a very sizable chunk of that, $110 million, and committed that to housing for people who are chronically homeless. And that will be funding 2,000 to 3,000 units of housing for people who have been chronically living on the streets and homeless.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's tremendous.
It's really
so
significant.
Addressing affordability, addressing housing insecurity through supports in the way that the county uniquely can. I think that that's really interesting. Is that unique in Travis County? If others around, let's say the state or country, are watching this podcast, is it likely that others are doing it, or is this another way that Travis County is doing things differently?
Well, I'm told that we have, for instance, on the partnership with the developers, that we are creating more deeply affordable multifamily rental units than almost any place else in the state.
Mm.
And it's because we're requiring it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the developers all want to partner and get their property tax
exempt. Of course
they
do. Yeah.
And we've just said, we recognize this is a thing of great value. So if you want to partner with us, here's what you have to do. And we require that the value of the taxes foregone be less than the value of the rents reduced. So we want the reduction in the rents to be greater than what they're getting in a tax exemption.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, and we're more aggressive about it than I think almost any place else in the state.
Well, I appreciate it. I can share with you another way that I know that Travis County is different from many others, and that is the investments that you have made historically in workforce solutions. The county for more than 20 years has supported subsidized childcare. So yes, there's a ballot referendum this year. Yes. But you can be proud that for more than 20 years, Travis County has invested in families having access to childcare. So this isn't a new thing,
yeah.
Commissioner. This is something you are continuing and potentially expanding. But also with the stimulus dollars, the county did support Workforce Solutions in having hundreds of additional people be able to get workforce services, training, childcare. So just so appreciative. And I will share with you, when I talk to my peers around the state and country, they are very jealous, envious perhaps is a better word, because their local government is not investing in their workforce board. So
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very interesting. I wonder what they're putting that money into, because it was a very generous allocation. And when the first tranche of that money was made available at the beginning of the pandemic, it went to the states. And a number of the states didn't spend it.
Mm-hmm.
Texas was one of them.
Mm.
And so the National Association of Counties and other local government groups lobbied the Biden administration, which was the new administration, and said, please send it directly to the cities and the counties. We'll spend it. We'll invest it in our communities. And that's how we were able to get such a sizable contribution. We got $247 million at the county.
Wow.
And we put $110 million of it into the housing for the chronically homeless to just try and help people get back on their feet.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate everything that you've done, all of your leadership. What have we not talked about today, Commissioner, as it relates to your priorities, anything around workforce jobs that you would like listeners, watchers of this podcast to know about?
I do think we're going to have difficult conversations around the impacts of climate change.
Okay.
Our region will run out of water, and we are not doing enough to conserve water and to be more responsible stewards of it. The growing heat will have huge impacts on people's ability to work outside. We're already seeing growing numbers of illness and death related to extreme heat. Our region will experience wildfires. We're the second highest threat region in the country behind California for wildfires. Mm. People don't realize it, but we will start to see more of those kinds of impacts. And across the country, and in some places close to home, people's insurance is being canceled. Mm-hmm. And so people will have a difficult time paying their mortgage, staying in their homes. So as a country and as a state and as a region, we have to begin dealing with the impacts, and we have to do everything we can to reverse climate change, because it will affect all of us, and particularly fall hardest on poor communities, mm-hmm. but really have devastating impacts on future generations. So if you care about your kids or your grandkids or any future generation, we have got to do more about it.
Yeah. So Commissioner, you paint a picture of a future that seems pretty harsh. And as a workforce board, I'm always thinking about where are there opportunities for individuals, humans, to build resilience, even as we think about ways we need to ensure that our climate, our environment has resilience. So as you think about that future, how might we, not that we're trying to put a glossy coat on something that doesn't deserve it, but where might there be job opportunities? Where might there be workforce opportunities for people that are committed to making Travis County as resilient as possible?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I do feel like I have to warn people, because it's kind of a terrifying conversation. But I tell people, would you rather that your leaders lied to you about this? Mm. Or would you rather hear the truth so you can be better prepared? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of my starting point. I assume people would rather hear the truth, although occasionally people are like, can we please not talk about this? It's too depressing. But, and I think the Biden administration did a brilliant job with this. They tied really enormous amounts of money. I mean, billions and billions of dollars in both the Inflation Reduction Act and the infrastructure legislation to job creation. And there's a Justice 40 component, mm-hmm. which requires that if you're going to go after federal funds to, you know, build a dam or elevate your roadways so they won't flood, or you know, any kind of infrastructure project, if you want to get that federal money, you have to employ people who fit a certain demographic criteria, people who have been marginalized, who've traditionally not had as much success in the workforce, and you have to provide job training. Okay. For them. So I think there's a really brilliant component that says, if you want this federal money to do these important things in your community to make it more resilient, you also need to use that money to lift people up, to hire people, to train people. And there are enormous opportunities related to solar, related to making homes better insulated. So when you do run the air conditioner, it's not leaking through all of the windows and the doors and running up your utility bills to the point where you can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And then on the, you know, sort of the flip side, when homes are damaged, I live in Allendale. There was a freak hailstorm that happened in the spring, and every home within, I don't know how many blocks radius, has had their roofs repaired.
Oh, wow.
So there are crews of people working throughout the neighborhood, replacing roofs and making those homes more resilient with new roofs. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of opportunity as well. Anytime there's a hurricane, anytime there's, you know, severe and destructive weather, after the ice storms, you know, again, there was so much cleanup work that had to be done and repair work. And that's not ideal. You want to try and have, and the city of Austin does, they have great building code requirements so that homes will be more resilient.
Okay.
And so that's on the preventative side. But I think there are opportunities for jobs on all sides of this situation.
Yeah. So thank you for that. I'm hearing you paint a picture of jobs to help to try to prevent jobs that are available when something has happened. And then I also heard you speak about through these the federal funds, this requirement around investing in our workforce. So we don't just build roads, we build skills among our workers so that people can work well. You know, you're preaching to the choir here. I love that. And know that Workforce Solutions will continue to be the county's partner through this. We're what we do every day is support and connect local people to local jobs and really skill building and looking ahead with you and your fellow commissioners and the judge at what's coming is a big part of what we do. I really so appreciate your partnership. I appreciate your friendship. The candor you have always given to me and advice, Commissioner, has helped Workforce Solutions immeasurably. So this has been such an honor to talk to you today. Thank you for your time.
It's been lovely to talk to you as well. You did a great job with it.
Thank you very much. That's a lot coming from a former reporter. Is that what you did? News reporter?
I was a journalist with NPR stations in Minnesota and Philadelphia.
See, there we go. That's where we should have gone in this. So thank you again for all your time.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Austin Hires Local, powered by Workforce Solutions Capital Area. To learn more about what you heard today or to see what Workforce Solutions Capital Area can do for you, visit WFScapitalArea.com. To stay updated on new episodes, subscribe to Austin Hires Local on your podcast app of choice. Until next time.